Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good afternoon, good evening, hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for tuning in to our podcast. We are here to bring you the latest breaking news and conversation around everything LGBTQ. Today, invariably, we are going to talk about the impeachment of Donald Trump, even though it doesn't have a direct correlation to LGBTQ issues. It is certainly prevalent in our world, and with all the anti-trans policies and threats that the Trump administration poses, it certainly is significant. So we will get to that in a few minutes. We also have other issues that we're probably going to touch on as well in our conversation. Normally in our show, we usually have a guest on board that I'm very excited to talk to, and I know the conversation is going to be very upbeat, sometimes inspiring, always entertaining, just generally something we want to dig into. Today, I feel more of a sense of dread and regret because what we're going to talk about is somebody who has been kind of a fierce ally of gay and lesbian people, but today exhibited at best a severe lapse of judgment, and at worst, and since there is sort of a history there, a proclivity to outright transphobia. And that celebrity that I'm talking about is none other than author J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter Empire, et cetera, billionaires, and author. What has taken place is there was a case in the UK surrounding a woman named Maya Forstatter. Maya refers to herself as a gender-critical feminist. Maya also was a compatriot or an employee or a contract player for an international think tank that campaigns against poverty and inequality. When they discovered that Maya had been out on Twitter basically ranting on an anti-trans campaign, declaring that the their biology of origin was set in stone forever and ever for every individual, and that they were either male or female, and that was how she saw things, the organization deemed her inappropriate in terms of carrying forth their mission, which was to, again, campaign against poverty and inequality. She sued them, and a judge ruled that, in fact, her behavior did indicate that she was not in a position to help them fulfill that goal of their organization. And the judge's exact words from the judgment was, quote, "The totality of evidence that she is abolitionist in her views of sex, and it is a core component of her belief that she will refer to a person by the sex she considers appropriate, even if it violates their dignity and or creates an intimidating, hostile, degrading, humiliating, or offensive environment." So that was the job she was slated to do, was to create a safe environment for all people. She was deemed ineffective and unable to do that based on her behavior on this campaign that she put out to do that for transgender people. And she was fired, and the court upheld that firing, or her contract was not renewed. Enter J.K. Rowling. J.K. Rowling put out a support of Maya over Twitter, in which J.K. Rowling said, "Dress however you please, call yourself whatever you like, sleep with any consenting adult who will have you, live your best life in peace and security, but force women out of their jobs for stating that sex is real, hashtag I stand with Maya, hashtag this is not a drill. Unfortunately, this is not the first time that J.K. Rowling has entered into the controversy of being transphobic. She had written a novel in 2015 called The Silkworm. It was written under her pseudonym Robert Galbraith. And in this book, there's a scene when the main character, Carmonan Strike, discovers a trans woman and threatens her with prison time and with the accompanying threat of prison rape. Later then in 2017, J.K. Rowling also liked a tweet that was linked to a Medium piece that apparently was very anti-trans women. Then in 2018, she liked another tweet that called trans women, quote unquote, men in dresses. And her representatives tried to pass that off as just a, quote, middle-aged moment in which her finger accidentally hit the like button. But in this case, she's defiant. She's been contacted, or her PR people have been contacted by GLAAD to try to have a conversation with her about this. And so far, that's been rejected. So, yes, Voldemort has popped up in the world of J.K. Rowling, and she appears to have sunk into the dark side. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And with that, I'd like to welcome onto the show my esteemed co-host, Brody Levesque, and we'll be talking about that and other issues. Brody, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rob, and good afternoon, good evening, and good morning in some cases to our listeners out there. I wanted to make a kind of a footnote for our American listeners in particular, because we do have a global audience. Yesterday was kind of a sad day in Alexandria, Virginia. Herman Boone, who was the inspiration behind the classic film Remember the Titans, died at his home in Alexandria. He was 84. This is probably one of the most interesting and compelling stories that I have ever seen beyond the movie itself. The coach led a high school in Alexandria that was known as a segregated high school at a time when things were really very uncomfortable and busing was going on, and there was a lot of prejudices, even in the South, especially in Virginia. And he took over as a head coach of basically a white football team with some black players, and he brought more black players in. And he took that high school, T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, into an undefeated season and a state championship in 1971. And I think the most important thing that Coach Boone did, above and beyond anything else, was that with that action, he played a very key role in combating racism that had permeated not just Alexandria and its community, but the districts and the communities in Northern Virginia into Central Virginia, and as a matter of fact, to the country at large. So I would like to extend at least my, you know, commiserations to the family of Coach Boone. And for those of you that are sports fans or sports lovers, the movie is Remember the Titans. You can get it streaming, or you can go find it and purchase it. But it's one film, and I'm not a sports guy, but it's one film I highly, highly, highly recommend. So commiserations to the Boone family on the loss of Coach Boone. Of course, the other thing that has been making headlines is the impeachment, which occurred yesterday in
right.
the U.S. House of Representatives. Yeah.
Brody, before you move on to the impeachment, because while you're touching on racism, I wanted to bring up another thing that has come to light. It's not something that just happened by any means. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's almost 100 years old. But for me personally, reading about it was beyond horrifying, and that is the discovery, and I believe it's in Oklahoma, of potentially mass graves of hundreds and hundreds of African American people. This was a massacre that happened allegedly in about 1921. This was an African American part of a town in Oklahoma that they were confronted. A group of the black businessmen then were stood up against the white attack on one of the people in that community who was alleged to have done some harm to a white woman. And in the night, the white people of the town went in and killed hundreds and hundreds of African-American people and buried them in a secret grave. And it is only now through some of the advanced techniques that they believe they've discovered those graves. But that is a really horrific part of American history that I had never heard about before. I don't know that we know all the details of it, and I hope that in the coming years we do find out more about it and put it out there, because it is a really specific, huge, huge thing that occurred in the American experience, and systematic racism and everything that plagues us today. It is a prime example of where we come from historically. And I hope people put a spotlight on it and try to understand it and understand the ripple effects and how it affected our culture moving forward from there. But I wanted to bring that up before we moved on to impeachment and moved off the topic
I'm
brought up here with racism.
I'm glad you did. It was known as the Tulsa Massacre. It occurred in 1921. So in terms of relative history in the United States, yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And it was extremely horrific. And they have been working towards trying to locate these graves for quite a while. They've been using ground-penetrating radar. They believe they have located at least two or three of the burial sites, one of which is located, no surprise, under a parking lot. So it's a bad time in American history. And I think that's why when we get stories like Coach Boone's, which are, you know, heartening and, you know, really are inspiring. Sometimes it's difficult to offset that sort of thing with, you know, things like the Tulsa Massacre. And of course, during that same time period, was really horrific in terms of lynching of African Americans across the United States, particularly in the Deep South. So, yeah, and it's just one of those things that I guess is germane to the next topic of impeachment, because one of the things that Trump had done, you know, whether intentionally or not, has been to give license to white supremacists and given license to people that are in fact racists and have no problem displaying racist types of behaviors. And, you know, although that wasn't a direct factor into the impeachment by the U.S. House, I heard during the course of the debate yesterday mention of some of the president's proclivities for, you know, more or less either boosting or acknowledging groups that, you know, no U.S. president should acknowledge, or, you know, I believe in one instance after Charlottesville, he made the reference to there's good people on both sides. Well, you know, no, Mr. President, that's not true. With the House vote for impeachment, currently as it stands, House Speaker Pelosi, House Majority Whip Steny Hoyer, Chairman Nadler, Chairman Waters, Chairman Schiff are, you know, considering at this point. First of all, they have to find two people that they want to use as what they call the House managers, which are basically prosecutors. But I think more importantly is what they're trying to decide to do is the timing to bring it to the Senate, if they bring it to the Senate at all, which is kind of driving, you know, the majority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, crazy. The president is literally gone around the bend today on Twitter about this issue. You know, the Republicans are screaming all sorts of things, and the Democrats are kind of holding, you know, to that they want to see a fair and impartial trial. And Senate Leader McConnell and some of the other senators, including Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, have basically said that they will not be impartial jurors. And that's unacceptable to the Democrats. The Democrats are seeing this as a constitutional responsibility. This should be country before party. What they're seeing and what they're hearing from the Republicans on the Senate side is polar opposite of that. So at this point, the Speaker has not transmitted the articles to the Senate, and there are discussions and negotiations obviously underway at this point. However, in the meantime, President Trump is essentially in a Twitter rage meltdown, and there are quite a few other people that are backers of the president, of course, that are also, you know, raging out at, you know, the House leadership for this. I think it's important to note, and for our listeners in particular, that the House of Representatives is constitutionally mandated to do the impeachment and then pass it to the Senate, and the Senate is constitutionally not mandated, but they are the ones that are supposed to hold a trial. Okay, they're supposed to be held according to their own rules. This is where it gets a little sticky and a little problematic. There's also no mandate for Speaker Pelosi to send the impeachment to the Senate for a trial. They could just leave it as it is. He's impeached. The effect of his being impeached, sadly, is kind of limited to he can't pardon himself and neither can anybody else. Nor does it prevent him, as has been noted, from, you know, stirring up and causing more trouble. Of course, his reaction to the impeachment at a rally in Battle Creek, Michigan yesterday evening was kind of deplorable. He attacked a deceased, respected member of the U.S. House, Representative Dingell. He attacked other people. And I'm not going to use this term lightly, but for all intents and purposes, you know, I watched bits and pieces of the rally, and it quite frankly reminded me of Hitler's Nuremberg rallies, and it was just completely tone deaf. It was stirring and whipping up hatred. There was not whipping up the base politically. This was them. If it had been the 1930s, it would have been Hitler screaming, Jew, 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 you know. It's really pretty sad. So even though he's been impeached, this process still has a rather long way to go. And, you know, at this point, Rob, I just honestly, I don't know. It's really sad.
No, the move by Nancy Pelosi makes sense. I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's what is to be gained, you know, to send the impeachment over to something that looks like there's been plotting as to how to nullify it at the get-go. So it doesn't seem like there's a big risk in not sending it to when that's what is anticipated. The commentary on the they thing is, and it's on both sides on that. It's like the reduction to anybody who doesn't agree, you know, is not respected as being nuanced anymore, either way. And, you know, he's certainly whipping it up to an extreme frenzy, because he is being pushed into an extreme corner. So that's expected type place for him to be in. But I am hoping that at some point calmer voices try to uncouple the they across the board, and where people have dialogues and discuss it, and, you know, that we find middle grounds on everything. I mean, it's ironic because, you know, middle ground is actually continues to happen. The Democrats just passed a trade deal that is very favorable to Trump's trade strategy. So, you know, it's like things are getting done, and there is this bipartisanship that actually is there, but then it gets turned into this black and white hate and good guy kind of dialogue where everybody is trying to rile up their individual bases. Brody, I want to switch back, though, to the topic that I brought up at the top of the hour and get your feedback on J.K. Rowling, and because there are a couple of other transgender issues in the news we want to talk about as well. But what's your take on the current controversy?
The reaction that I've seen so far from the LGBTQI community as a greater whole has been one of dismay, has been one of shock, has been one of anger. I noticed that, quite a few of the activists, including some of the folks that, have been on the show here that are friends of the show, such as Zach Ford and some of the others, have, more or less eviscerated J.K., in public on the internet. One of the problems, and again, this is kind of in a way peculiar to what's going on in England right now, there has become even more of a pointedly touchy issue over trans and LGBT issues in the United Kingdom, and in trans issues in particular, that has been rather unfortunate. And there has been an uptick in what we call trans exclusionary radical feminist spokespeople and movement, which has been funded, no surprise, by the American TERF and, of course, anti-trans, anti-gay establishments and organizations, including the Heritage Foundation and a few others. It all comes down to the same rather tired argument. We're seeing it with trans folk in sports, trans men in particular. We're seeing it with the bathroom issue, the never-ending men in the dress of the, in the bathroom crap. It's even extended itself into the, to the drag community within the gay community, with their, drag storytelling hours in libraries. And there's been a conflation of, issues there between trans and the drag communities. JK stepping into this is beyond unfortunate, but there's a couple of things that I do need to point out. I haven't seen anybody make an honest effort to approach her in a non-confrontational way that would probably at least get dialogue open. And I would caution the American trans activists that this is not someone without means. And she's human and antagonized far enough. She can stroke a check for 50,000 to a quarter of a million pounds sterling, okay, and hand it off to one of the anti-gay forces like the Christian Alliance in the United Kingdom without even blinking an eye if it was to be used towards trans-specific issues. There's been a lot of, I can't read her books anymore, and I can't do this, and I can't do that. And the basic attitude that's going to come back is, well, fine, we don't need you anyway. You make up a tiny percentage of, our readers. And this is how this is headed. I think before it gets there, though, I think it's going to be critically important that core heads prevail and that open dialogue is held with her. Yeah, the whole thing is if you beat them over the head, you're not going to get them to listen. It's that, and that, of course, is true of, any subject. It doesn't matter whether it's trans-specific or the impeachment of Trump. If you don't make at least an effort to explain things and to put forth in a, calming way, especially someone who's an ally of the lesbian gay community, and she is and has been, it's going to go south, and it's going to go south not just for the trans community, but the entire community at once. She'll just say, well, screw all of you. I think that part of this is driven by a lot of misinformation. I know it is. I mean, I've been on the phone this morning with trans activists and dear friends who, you know, they're hurt by this. But again, a lot of it goes back to the misinformation campaign. We've got to get to the point where we can have these conversations without it being, you know, so antagonistic. And as long as you've got the American Christian organizations literally pouring petrol on the plane, that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Right. Just a heads up, yeah. Brody. According to Deadline, they've quoted that GLAAD reached out to Rawlings publicists to have an off-the-record conversation involving members mm-hmm. of the trans community, of which Rawling declined having that conversation. So I'm not disagreeing with you that more attempt to reach out and have a discussion is needed, but apparently some people have tried to do that already.
Well, and I don't dispute that. I'm aware of at least a couple of attempts that were, you know, made behind the scenes and right. were met with resistance. There are going to be folks that unfortunately will case harden their position on that. And again, it's, you know, it's the ignorance factor more than anything else. It's also the fact that the trans issue in general has been a lightning rod, and even probably more so since 2007, and it's gotten progressively worse. And I've noticed that people are only too willing to talk past each other and over each other as opposed to talking with each other. And then when they have someone who is an A-lister like JK, and they immediately jump on the TERP and bash wagon instead of, you know, which is what happened
right.
here. You know, and I'm not talking about this particular incident, actually. I'm talking about a few that took place before she left Twitter for a while on a sabbatical, if you will, in September, earlier this fall. That is just, you know, it's annoying and it's unfortunate. And I really wish there would be a way to resolve this. But, Rob, at the end of the day, I don't think there will be. I think if she gets pushed too far, she will use her wealth and she'll stroke checks to organizations that will make trans people in at least the United Kingdom miserable for a lot longer. You know, and that's unfortunate. You know, you push her into a position where she gets angry enough, she starts writing checks to anti-trans groups and TERF groups. And, you know, it just, this is how the cycle goes. And it's that kind of divisiveness. You know, it also, too, in a larger sense, Rob, is a reflection of the times that we're living in the United States, in the United Kingdom, in France, in a lot of places. It just seems that we've gotten to the point where people don't want to talk to each other. They want to beat each other down. That's okay. But talk to each other? Yeah, that's a no. We're also living in the times where there is a lot of potency behind conservatism of all different stripes that leads to this sort of nonsense. And that's empowered in the United States in particular and by the Christian Alliance in the UK, but mostly in the United States by the evangelical types. And they're a minority, which is, you know, I guess it's a bit of irony. If you'll remember, last week we had the controversy over the lesbian kiss commercial with the Hallmark Channel and the movies that, you know, everyone lost the plot over. And, of course, the Christian right immediately started, you know, labeling opposition as the gay Gestapo because Hallmark reversed its decision. They went from, okay, we're going to pull the commercial to, no, we're not going to pull the commercial. And what ended up happening was the very people that caused the ruckus to begin with, you know, immediately fired back with gay Gestapo, yet they're the ones that started it, more or less. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
Same thing with Jacob.
Well, and,
you know?
And that's the thing is, well, I mean, this is happening, of course. I mean, what we just talked about the impeachment. You know, it's the mm-hmm. arguments that are happening are not discussion; they are tactics. We had the Republicans coming out with this tactic of, well, you've always wanted to impeach him, therefore, whatever you're impeaching him on now must be invalid. I mean, that was the heart of what they were saying, which doesn't even make sense. Because even if your premise is true, that you look at somebody and go, that is somebody whose behavior in general appears to be unethical and criminal. And now we have a situation where that behavior, we have proof and documentation, and now we're going to bring charges. Just because you had that sense of them beforehand does not mean that they didn't do exactly what you're accusing them of doing now. But the Republican argument doesn't even embrace that. And the tactic to scream oppression and Nazism and all of that is the first go-to when they're not getting their way. You know, so it's that's tragic. My hope is with a J.K. Rowling, however, that where you have somebody who has been supportive of equality and sensitive to an aspect of the LGBTQ experience, that this would be a person that we wouldn't have to go to an extreme dialogue, but rather be able to sit down with. And I mean, it's if she met and understood transgender people and came to just get to know them. I mean, it's like of all the transgender people I know, I do not think of them as their former gender identity, as them as that in a dress or that in pants. You know, it's mm-hmm. that's not who they are. You know, they're in fact, I have trouble seeing them anything other than the gender of which they identify. I mean, I have trouble even imagining them as another gender from that. It just smacks of, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but deep ignorance of the people and the experience of what it is that you're not just making some intellectualized pronouncement about, you know, there are two sexes. I mean, you are actually harming the experience of people's day-to-day lives and their dignity of them being able to live comfortably and go to the restroom and be part of society. It's, you know, that indignation that you're exhibiting is affecting that. And that's what is needed to be understood. And maybe in the understanding of that and moving the dime, she being a major communicator can share that with people that need to transition their thinking in those terms. I mean, it's like this is an issue that, you know, we're seeing this in the hate crimes in the United States, you know, in terms mm-hmm. of the tick up of hate crimes and 23 trans women who have been murdered. You know, this is life and death. This is not, you know, some like I said, intellectual discussion. And the flippancy of it reminds me of the marriage equality discussions when all they had to do, they didn't have to put out a big argument in the early days when they were trying to reach people who were anti-marriage equality. All they had to do was say, well, of course marriage is just between a man and a woman. What else would there be? Because that was all people had experienced. And so that was like, oh, of course. And people would default to their comfort zone. And so now they're speaking to generations who that's all they know is that cisgender privilege norm of, oh, they're just born boys or girls, men or women, you know, and not understanding where the nuance comes from, you know, what is its origins are, what the ramifications are of not recognizing it and supporting people in their own vision of themselves. You know, all of that is an important discussion that needs to be happening, not for the comfort zone within a cisgender mindset and household, but to be good fellow citizens in the world and allow other human beings to live their lives. We need to embrace it.
I don't disagree. You made mention of the FBI Department of Justice report that was issued a month and a half ago, talking about the fact that hate crimes ticked up in 2018. And of course, we had 23 trans women of color that have been murdered. There's actually a 24th victim, a young white trans woman from Vancouver, Clark County, Washington, her death has now been labeled a murder as well. In addition, of course, to that, we're also seeing an uptick in very violent acts of homophobia. Back in the United Kingdom, there was an incident earlier on the London Transport earlier this year, and a group of teenagers were involved in it, and a 16-year-old today was let off with a referral, which is basically the English version of probation. And this is a brutal attack on a pair of lesbians on one of the buses of London Transport. We've seen a lot of that even here in the United States. We've seen an uptick, at least in reported hate crimes that we're seeing by some, you know, law enforcement agencies. And as the FBI noted in its report, one of the larger issues at stake here is the fact that we still have way too many hate crimes that don't get reported. So for everyone that's accounted for, there may be two or three that, you know, are not. And then there's another type of, you know, kind of tying it all together is it, as we look back, especially over this last year. You remember the case in Chicago with the Empire Act, Justice Ouellette, who, you know, that turned into, you know, was it a fake hate crime? Was it a real hate crime? The charges were dismissed. The superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, Eddie Johnson, who has now since lost his job, he was fired by Chicago's newly elected lesbian, I will note, mayor, openly lesbian mayor. You know, so it becomes a thing of, you know, where exactly is going to be a good line for this? And of course, one of the things that I look at, and we mentioned it earlier when we were talking about J.K. Rowling, but, you know, you still have a movement afoot that ties directly into these hate crimes. For example, there was a nasty, nasty custody battle in a North Texas county courtroom, not too far from Dallas, where the mother, who, by the way, is also a physician, was allowing her child to transition. And it turned into a thing. And now the thing has become another part of the anti-trans movement. And we've got lawmakers in Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Kentucky that are now proposing laws that will make parents, and in some cases, in Georgia and Kentucky, healthcare providers and other providers, criminally liable, labeling the transition of minors as child abuse. So we can still frame the context of what happened with JK, what happened with the uptick in hate crimes, and now this. It all kind of follows within the same narrow patterns. And it doesn't make it, I don't think, any easier when you have this sort of framework, you know, and mindset from the conservatives and, again, the minority that they are, the evangelical right. And I need to stress that to our listeners. While the evangelical right is extremely potent and extremely influential, particularly with Republican Party politics and the current president of the United States, they're still a minority, and they are not representative of, quite frankly, the larger majority of people who identify themselves as, you know, as Christian. But because they are the ones that have the most amount of money, the most amount of concentrated power, and they are probably above and beyond the most vindictive, they're the ones that get things done. It's effective. You know, Rob, you and I have long talked about the fact that one of the problems, at least from a political sense with this, is the fact that the right, regardless of the composition of it, can literally walk lockstep, goose step down the avenue okay? Stabbing each other in the back and smiling the whole time. But if you try to get the progressives, the liberals, you know, and the left to do, you know, any kind of coordinated effort, it's like herding cats in a parade. And it really becomes an issue. And this has been one more added little feature to this. And then there's one other thing. The right,
well,
particularly
what,
the evangelicals, are good about staying on message.
Yeah. The one left, thing here that is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
One thing that's kind of ironic is in the case of the conversation with J.K. Rowling and everything she is representing, and I don't mean just herself, but the activist she is representing and the thought process of that activist has actually nothing to do with the evangelical right, even though there's this odd convergence that is happening around this. For example, Matt Walsh, who is a rabid evangelical columnist who has put forth many ridiculous and bizarre views from being part of that philosophy, has come out in defense or in indignation defense over J.K. Rowling. And the ironic part of that is in previous writings and previous podcasts, he's come out and basically highlighted the demonic and non-Christ-like representation of Harry Potter. So, I mean, it's like they're really the oddity of them all dancing with each other around the anti-trans issues is kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
But it's this is a different faction that is coming out with this. I mean, it's the turfdom philosophy, the radical feminism philosophy that is being represented in this current wave of transphobia.
And they've married themselves with the Christian right in both the UK and the US. We've discovered sources of income flowing both directions across the pond, and it is a very strange marriage. I will be the first one to say it's a very strange marriage. But it's, you know, it's one of the things where you look at this and you suddenly realize that this is the dysfunctionalness of the, you know, of the entire system, not just in the United Kingdom, but obviously in the U.S. as well. So I don't know. And of course, you know, the umbrella and the overarching thing, of course, of this last year was what happened 50 years ago in front of a mafia bar in, you know, the West Village in New York City in June. So it's like 50 years past Stonewall, and we're still having these discussions, and we're still having these problems, and we're still having these issues. It's like we seem to move the needle forward some, but then, you know, it stops. I don't necessarily seeing it as falling backwards. So it's, I don't view this as a one step forward, three step back, but it just seems like the needle inches forward, then it suddenly freezes, you know, and here we are, you know, within five decades of what happened at, you know, the Stonewall Inn and other movements, you know, taking place, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, and around the country during the same time period, that, you know, it's almost one would wish, you know, there's got to be an end to this at some point, you know. Is there some sort of exit strategy? That said, we still have incremental victories. And I think one of the incremental victories that we're experiencing, which I'm very appreciative of, is the ongoing conversation and, quite frankly, the ongoing bans of conversion therapy, which has proven to be, you know, well, it's pseudoscience. I mean, it's just you can't change a person's sexual orientation, period, end of stop. But it's nice to see, you know, that changing. In Germany, for example, just this week, the German government is putting together a ban countrywide on conversion therapy. In the United States, we're seeing a couple more bills being introduced. I think we're up to 23 states now that have banned it. There have been a couple setbacks, such as the federal judge in Florida in the Tampa area who ruled that it was a legitimate, you know, therapeutic practice. But, you know, overall, you know, I'm heartened by things like that, especially as we have a couple of cases sitting before SCOTUS that we're going to get rulings on at the end of the summer in June. That is really, quite frankly, going to be groundbreaking of either validating the workplace rights, the housing rights of the LGBTQI community, particularly the trans community, and its safe spaces and work and housing and public accommodation, or there's going to be an extremely negative ruling, and they're going to say, well, you know, Title VII doesn't apply here, and it's going to create a lot of chaos, and it's going to create a lot of problems. And, you know, the cases were heard in October. The decisions will be handed down June, at probably midway through the month, towards the end of the month, as the court winds down this session. And people and legal observers are really concerned about this, particularly with some of the LGBT organizations such as Lambda Legal, Little Glad, the National Center for Lesbian Rights, et cetera, because this could have a severely negative impact should the court rule that, you know, LGBTQI people aren't afforded protections under Title VII, and or the Civil Rights Act, as it's more commonly referred to. So that could be very, very problematic. And I'm hopeful that the court will at least, you know, look at it in such a way that, you know, it's not going to go bad. But with this court makeup being as conservative as it is, I'll be honest with you, I don't hold out a lot of hope. As much as I'd like
to. It's a little bit, it's been concerning because even, you know, there's already been one Trump-appointed judge that has supported, albeit I don't think it was directly about conversion therapy itself. I think it was more on due process or, you know, some sort of technicality, but he still supported the case over not outlawing it in one jurisdiction. So I think that may come more to a head, and I do think that the Supreme Court is, you know, a bit of a crapshoot in terms of that. So, you know, we cannot rely on the court to be addressing things just based on principle any longer, which is something that was in our favor philosophically in the past. Because even, you know, in the marriage equality movement, a lot of the things that moved marriage equality cases forward were not people of one partisan group or the other. I mean, we had people that were appointed by the Bushes. We had people that were traditional Republican lawyers that were coming out and just looking at the principles of it and pushing it forward. You know, and, you know, in order to be successful in these cases where transgender issues and things like that are taking place, you know, we need that across the board support.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that we need to be cautious of, you know, pressing forward is that there cannot be a reliance on you know, the courts, as it's going to have to be, and I've said this before, that folks do have to, you know, move and press forward to get things done through Congress and through elected representatives, and that's really, you know, where it amounts. I don't know. I'm looking at this, and of course, you know, my immediate thought is that, you know, again, and this goes back to how critical elections are, as we start to go into the cycle here for the 2020 election, you know, we do need to be very much aware of that. And I think that this is something that, you know, we have a responsibility, even with our little podcast here, to, you know, stress to folks, you know, you've got to get out there and you've got to vote and you've got to, you know, because elections matter. We're seeing it now.
Yeah.
Elections matter.
But to your point too, I think we also have to have dialogue, you know, and I'm not disagreeing about you and elections and affecting the system themselves, but where we have the celebrities on the landscape who can create a lot of either division or unity, depending on how they fall. Brody, what would you say to J.K. Rowling if you had such a meeting with her?
The first thing I would do is I would absolutely point her to the science. Okay, it's, you know, she's taking a hardened position based on an idea and on a concept that is quite frankly no longer applicable. You know, there's provable science in this. There is, you know, a way to measure this, you know, in terms of things other than the fixed idea that there's only two sexes, you know, two genders. That's, you know, look at that. Look past the other thing that I would recommend to her is look past this idea, okay, that, you know, what is set has got to be. And, you know, and I'm with you on this in terms of, you know, go out and meet trans folks, spend time with them, you know, empathize with them, you know, try and figure out, all right, you know, what they are as human beings, as opposed to what your perceptions are in terms of a gender model, which is no longer accurate anyway. Yeah, but I would try to persuade her to see it from a different point of view and not to view it as a threat. I think the largest part of this is, you know, viewing it as a threat. And then that's something that, you know, we've got to get away from. Trans people are people. Trans women are women. Trans men are men. We've literally got to get away from this idea and this concept that somehow is a threatening thing to have. We've got to move away from that.
Well, yeah, and especially with kids, where the evidence is becoming very, very solid medically, that when a very young child identifies strongly with a gender that you don't think they are, by supporting them and guiding them through that and allowing them that expression, they basically do not fall into the pitfalls of destructive, either self-destructive or destructive patterns, and from a mental health perspective. And grow and are able to live comfortably and solidly. And when it is the opposite, when they're unsupported, both in their family and I think to have a major celebrity who is the core of, you know, young people's literature, it is destructive. And 75% of transgender youth, you know, consider or attempt suicide. And that is not an insignificant thing. So I would hope that Ms. Rowling would step back and consider the impact of what her opinion can affect. I think it's important. She could be, you know, a very helpful, healing persona in that. But again, that would also take the environment you and I've talked about in terms of not having people, because she came out with something that was ill-founded and wrong, to allow her the evolvement to move away from that position.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. Absolutely. So, I mean, at this point, you know, I think it's a loss. There's going to be a lot of very disappointed folks. There already are, but we're just going to have to wait and see where it goes from there. You know.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping for further discussions. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of further discussions, we will be having those in future episodes of Rated LGBT Radio. We really appreciate your listenership, and we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast and spread the word, have other people subscribe to it as well. You can find it on any podcast app. Just do a search of Rated LGBT Radio, and there we are, and hit subscribe. If you're on a computer, you can also just Google us under Rated LGBT Radio, and you can find our past episodes on Blog Talk Radio. Also, listen to Out in Santa Cruz. That is Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find that on www.ksco.com, and you can find past shows for that as well on that website, all of which have to do with the LGBTQ experience. I want to thank Brody for his time, his expertise, and good conversation today. Again, thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. We appreciate you very, very much, and we will talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.